podcast, but welcome. I'm Scott Mason, and across the palatial Mike and Scotty Live studios is Mike Rose. Mike, how are you?
It is one big studio, isn't it?
It stretches all the way from Bellingham to wherever the hell it is you are. North Dartmouth, Massachusetts.
Yep. So. I bet there's a small number of people who have any idea where that is.
Well, you know, and
that's just how we like it, by the way.
Right, exactly. Well, and you're, I think we're actually both tucked away in the witness protection program, really.
Well, but you need to be, though.
You know, I remember many, many years ago when we started the Scotty Mason Show that we'd get emails from so many folks that thought that we were all in some kind of room together when we recorded this. And
must have been the high production values.
Yeah, that wasn't the case now, and this isn't the case. That wasn't the case then, and this isn't the case now. But so we thank you for joining us. For those of you who belong to the Mike and Scotty Live Facebook page, you got a sense about what we're going to do with this podcast. But for those of you who don't, we certainly encourage you to do so because it's a way of keeping up with the goings on the podcast, but also contributions of many of our listeners. And Mike, you know, why don't you give us some background on what our thoughts are with this podcast?
Well, sure, and I'll take some credit for sort of having the idea of how to sort of resurrect making the podcast possible, because it you know, life goes on and people get very busy, and I think we had all gotten to the point where that we had so many things going on that. It was just getting to be a bear to get four people together to record the show, to get those schedules to mesh. And the show, I think for the better, had an increase in production values when Joe was doing all of the editing. But it meant that Joe had to do all the editing. And talk about a thankless job, you know.
So, oh, God.
I don't think Joe signed on for an infinite number of years to do a thankless job for free. So we are indebted to Joe for everything he did to bring the professionalism of the show up to what it had gotten to. And but I think by the same token, we needed to get a different kind of thing happening that would be fresh, current, easy to do for the people involved in it, and hopefully to come out on a much more frequent basis, you know, because there's nothing worse than listening to a dated kind of show that happened that way out of necessity. But that's not, I don't think, what anybody wanted ultimately to be chained to. So the idea was to look at what made it not be so much fun to create. And eliminate that, and get back to the to making it sort of lean and mean, and that's why we're calling it Mike and Scotty Live, because there's not going to be any post production. In other words, what we record is what comes out and goes out there. And I don't know about you, Scott, but the last thing I want to do is keep re-recording the show because we're screwing it up. So any mistakes that are in the show, we're going to consider those features, not bugs.
Those are bonuses, folks.
Exactly. No extra charge for those.
Yep. And, you know, I kind of know how the Beatles felt, right? it became, you know, just to kind of reiterate a little bit of what Mike said and expand on a little bit, it just got to be so difficult with all of our schedules, you know, four very, very busy people with families and outside commitments to get on the same page, to record, and Jimmy with his growing business and doing more and more shows all the time, and Joe raising a young son and a new job, and just the countless thankless hours of editing and post production that he contributed to this show, really allowed us to step up and put forth a very high quality, pretty polished show for, you know, four guys, who learned to play music in the Cavern Club in Liverpool.
Right.
And
we don't want to forget about your pro baseball career either.
Well, and then it was never our intention to, you know, make this something that was a burden. So, you know, for 9 years, the Scotty Mason Show existed, thanks in part to, you know, the contributions of the co-hosts. And, I may have been the guy asking the questions and the name on the masthead, it really was a contribution of all those involved. And this show will be, you know, an equal contribution from Mike and I. Mike came up with the concept and really pumped some enthusiasm into it. And I'm looking forward to this. I think this is going to be fun, Mike, because it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't have all of the attached burdens with it.
Right. And you know, when you come right down to it, even when we weren't recording the show, you and I would very often get on the phone and have these long conversations that were not much different, really, from what we would have done on the podcast. So, you know, like they said on Seinfeld, there's a show.
You know, a piece of feedback we would always hear, and I think we still plan to, you know, kind of follow along these lines, is that, you know, this podcast always sounded like a group of friends, you know, on Saturday morning in the hobby shop, just talking trains. And we want you as a listener to feel comfortable. You know, we're just two hobbyists like all of our listeners out there. And we want to keep it that way. So thank you for being with us.
People seem to enjoy hearing about, you know, what we're doing, what we're interested in and all of that. Towards the later years there, when I was mainly just doing the single segment there with you, I think that's kind of what got me thinking about this being a natural spin-off of that, but also including everything that you're doing and you're interested in. So
sure, of course.
Anybody, there'll be some familiarity of it, I think, for those who have been listening right along to that segment as well.
Yep. Now, I admit that my computer technology skills, well, I would say they're lacking, but they're completely non-existent. They're completely lacking. Mike, early on in the conversation said, you know, I'll man the website. I'll take care of making sure this gets up on the ether so folks can listen to it. But it hasn't been without its challenges, Mike.
Well, you know, I said that, and then I thought, I should probably find out what that entails. So I had a conversation with Jimmy, and he explained to me how he was doing the edits and the upload to the Scotty Mason Show website. But he didn't know how the feed got uploaded and was accessible via the other podcast avenues like iTunes and some of the other sites. So I ended up having a nice phone conversation with Joe, and he explained the whole process to me. And honestly, I took notes during the call because, having never done any of this stuff before in that category, I didn't want to forget anything. I'm kind of getting on in years. You know how that is.
So you're 60.
Exactly. So I made my notes, and by golly, I still have them. And I think I do understand the concept, and I also have some young whippersnappers I can kind of fall back on who know what they're talking to. But there's no doubt in my mind that it might be a little bit of fitting and starting in the beginning till I get the whole thing down. So the goal is to keep the technical end of it as seamless and easy as possible, so it doesn't become this bear to administer. So be prepared for a very austere website.
Well, but you know, so less is better, right?
Less is what we're going to do.
I don't think it will be uninformative, or, you know, and I'm speaking in terms of the website, or entertaining.
Right.
We needed to take a little bit of the complication out of it.
Right. And you know, that's often the best laid plan. So we'll see how that goes, but that's the goal, and we'll see if that if it's possible.
Yep. Yep. Now, Mike, do we have a resource anywhere for people to contact us with feedback at this point?
Other than the Facebook group?
Other than the Facebook group, correct.
Not yet. Now, I should probably state that I've got the prototype for the Mike and Scotty Live website on my screen even as we talk, and you know, it's just a framework. I think
yep.
there's going to be a way to send us emails through the site. Whether or not that's something that is going to be automatic or not, and I don't know what I have to do that, but I think it's something I can incorporate right into the site. So I would say that soon or soon enough, that should be possible.
Wonderful. We're going to, you know, just to kind of clue the listeners in as to what to expect from us, I think, you know, we're going to talk about what we know, Mike, on a monthly basis. And there's going to be some regular features, obviously, you know, updates on what you're doing from a layout building standpoint, from a modeling standpoint. You know, same with me and, you know, obviously also from, you know, kind of a business standpoint, because we both have businesses in the hobby,
right,
to varying degrees. You know, folks, if, you know, when the opportunity arises, if you do want to send us some suggestions, we'll certainly take them into consideration. And, we appreciate the fact that you care enough to contact us. So,
some of the folks on the Facebook group put out a few suggestions as well, and we should probably for future efforts take a look at those. And
yeah, absolutely.
You know, as soon as we run out of stuff to talk about that we have as pent up demand here, we'll certainly do that. When was the last time we recorded? Was it back in March?
I believe that's correct. Yes.
Okay. And who knows when it came out, but, you know,
right.
Obviously we've got a little bit of catching up to do here for folks that haven't been speaking with us any other way. So,
sure.
You know, we could certainly do that as a starting point, I guess.
And is it an apropos that we, you know, we kind of kick off the football here with this first podcast at Christmas time when, you know, the majority of us first got into this hobby?
Yeah, you know, that's true. When I think back to you know, the early days of my dad building his O-scale layout in the old house, and using legs for the layout that were like things he had torn out as part of the remodeling of that house when we moved in, the plasticville buildings, you know, the heft and the smell of those old, really heavy duty Lionel engines, and that
you could smell the grease.
Oh, and even the big transformer with the two orange handles, that even had its own aura to it, you know. I liked everything about that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's it. You know, and everybody has that story, I think. You know, and it can, the details can differ slightly, but you know, it all, you know, all kind of has a common denominator, even to the extent that, you know, when my girlfriend was a little girl, her dad, had bought her a train set that mm-hmm. they used to set up around the Christmas tree. And, you know, obviously it wasn't anything particularly sophisticated, but she still has it.
She still has it. That's amazing.
She still has it. We still set it up around the Christmas tree every year. A few years ago, we updated to Easy Track. Mm-hmm. You know, it still runs. You know, and it's it's just kind of cool every year just to set that up. But you know, I share a lot of those memories that you just mentioned, Mike.
Well, I have a new grandson, and he's only 3 months old, so he's just slightly too young to be introducing him to trains, but it's definitely on the agenda.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. And it's, you know, I think it's a hobby that we all hope to be able to pass down someday. So, I want to jump right into it because it's been so long since we've talked, and I know how fast you work. I know no grass grows under your feet. I want to jump into an update on your layout, and I think probably just as kind of a starting point, Mike, because this is our first podcast. Maybe you can kind of give a quick synopsis of the layout, what it is, what it represents,
Sure.
that sort of thing, and then update
Well, my layout has been being built for,
us.
it's approaching 30 years, believe it or not. I know that seems like an amazing number, but part of the impetus to building this house all that long time ago was to have a nice basement to build a layout in. And it has just evolved and changed over the years. It started out as a completely freelance layout and has evolved and changed into a totally prototype-based layout. It started out as a straight DC rotary five cab control, manual block control layout.
Sure.
And it
Lots
got,
of wires.
oh, so much soldering. And it got converted into early DCC, and then everything got upgraded to DCC friendly turnouts. And then just when I had that all squared away, the sound revolution came along, and that involved another upgrade to get things in proper shape for that. And as a matter of fact, I'm still cleaning up the last vestiges of the old wiring. I've decided as a component of this last round of rebuilding, that all of the sins of the past will be expunged, and will be completely modern with every aspect of the layout. At this point, there's not one square inch of the layout that has not been completely rebuilt, other than the bench work. So, it's sometimes impressive for me to think about the sheer number of man hours that have just, gone out the window. And it's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is it was a lot of happy hours. And a PhD course in model railroading, right? Because, you learn by doing. So my ability to do things rapidly now and at the level I do it at currently is only made possible by the zillion trillion mistakes and hours spent over the years to get to this point. At age of 60, I've been doing this since I was maybe 11, so that's a lot of years. So the layout that it has evolved into, like I said, a prototype based layout, and it's the former Lehigh Valley in Conrail days, 1985 ish, and at that point it was called Conrail's Lehigh Line. And it runs from Pittston, Pennsylvania, to Sayre, Pennsylvania. And these are all, almost every town on the line has been modeled in some fashion. So that is something that I kind of evolved into as well, because when I started to go total prototype, I did all of the new stuff as strictly prototype based, but there was all this legacy stuff on there that was left over from the freelance days. And the more I did it, the more I became less enthused with the fact that it was neither fish nor fowl. And at the same time, I started operating on other better layouts, like Mike Confalone's and Neil Schofield's and et cetera, et cetera. So I started to see what was possible, and anybody who knows Confalone knows that he's sort of infectious. His no sacred cows philosophy, and what comes out of that, when you see him on a regular basis, when you operate on his layout on a regular basis, you see the advantage to that approach, particularly when you're not getting any younger. So my methods have evolved into what some people would probably call like a rapid development kind of thing. But really, it's just I'm using different and better materials. I know what I want to do. I don't take months to sort of hem and haw about what needs to be done. If I can't figure it out, I get together with the brain trust and we bandy around ideas until somebody says something that makes me go, and it's just getting you over a hump. And I think the main secret to building a layout and getting it done is to actually work on the layout on a regular basis. And as simple as that sounds, a lot of people just can't do it, or they don't do it, or they won't do it. I've always made time to work on the layout almost
You know,
every week.
we've talked about scheduling so many times over the years, and you've proven that making that a discipline in your life has translated into productivity. And I think if whether it's your hobby or your work life or your family life, I think if people admitted that, you're just better off writing it down and making it a part of a schedule, it's easier to succeed. The argument, Mike, is that, well, it's my hobby and, I do it when I can and I don't want to feel like it's regimented. But if, and I'll use your methodology as an example. If your goal is to build a model railroad, and you're one person and not a club full of people, you really need that block of time
Yeah,
on a
otherwise
regular
it would
basis.
require multiple lifetimes.
It still might, but at least you know when you're going to be working on the layout.
Right. And for me, it's crucial that I don't kill the fun aspect of it, because this is really my favorite thing in the world to do. I'm never happier than when I'm in the basement and I've got some tunes on and I'm building scenery or laying track or whatever. That's my happy place, I live in New England. The winter is not ideal, but it's always sunny in Pennsylvania down in my basement. You know what I mean? And I've often joked about that, but for me, it really is true. I can go down there and it's warm and comfortable, and I'm doing what I enjoy doing, and that's what it's all about. So I didn't want to give the wrong impression that by pushing the agenda in terms of actually completing some things, that I was in any way sacrificing the fun aspect of it. I'm not turning it into a job, and I'd never be one of those people who would hire somebody to build a layout for them. For me, the building of it is a huge part of the fun. But I also want to operate it. I want to do things with it. It's really gratifying when you have an obsession and you see this giant system that you've designed and envisioned. That's really the only time it comes to life. You can get out and run a train anytime you want, but when you see the whole layout operating as a, well, like a transportation system, I guess. It's the only time you can do that, because it requires multiple people doing their job for that to actually happen. So that's been kind of a revelation for me, and it's infectious. When you have good obsessions, you just want to have more good obsessions, and you want to do things that make them better. And you want things to look better, and you want things to work better. So it's just this sort of continuous quality improvement thing that I've been doing to the layout over these years. And all of that is great when you're marching forward in a straight line, but sometimes you have to take a step back in order to take several steps forward. And that's basically what I've done this year.
It's a series of problem solving.
Well, yeah, and I should probably point out that, I'm a project manager by trade, and that doesn't mean that I'm certainly rigid in how I approach things. But if you're building a layout, and actually if you're remodeling a layout, which I think is more difficult than building a layout from scratch, you'd better have some organization about the scope of what you're doing and the order of business, and prioritize appropriately, and making sure you've got the materials you need for each step of the way, or you're never going to get it done efficiently. You know what I mean? So I actually, for the first time ever, when I was doing this remodel, I actually sat down and and put down all the steps on a spreadsheet and assign some time values to it, so I could just get my arms around if I was crazy for doing this remodel or not. You know, if it looked like a 3.5 year project, I was probably going to say, well, boy, that would be nice, but you know, I don't know that I want to take that big a step backwards. But it looked like something that in a year's time I could have substantially complete, and it would make a very big impact in how the layout is used and how the layout looks. So I know you've got it as part of your agenda to come down and actually see this in person, and that'll I think give us more to talk about, because the stuff that you see will probably drive a lot of questions about the whys and wherefores.
Well, you know, you talk about this particular remodeling project, but I think I would refer to kind of the body of work in general. And this has been a number of remodeling projects, and I'll call them dominoes. You know, and you know, it seems to be you know, every year and a half or so, you know, there's something going on to the betterment of the layout. And is there a line in the sand, Mike, that you draw and say, not going to do that?
Yeah, there is actually. And honestly, I think this is it. In other words, I looked at the scope of what I had to do here, and I saw what it would get me. And I thought, you know what? If I can have that, I won't need to do another giant remodel probably ever. I don't know if I have it in me. You know, it is not a trivial effort to do what I've been doing here. And not only is it time consuming and, you know, money consuming, because hey, everything costs money, right? But it's, you know, it's it was I just had the sense of it's never going to get any easier physically to do this stuff. You know, you're crawling around under the layout and working upside down on wiring, and you know, some of it is better the younger you are. So I felt like I just didn't have any time to lose on it. I want to get to a point where I'm really enjoying my. I mean, look at Dick Elwell, right? I mean, there's a guy who's been using and running and enjoying his layout for a long period of time. It's not like he hasn't done a lot of work on his layout, but I don't think I know anybody who's been using and enjoying their layout longer than him.
Well, and the interesting part to that, Mike, and just as an add-on to what you're talking about these remodeling projects, yeah, Dick and I have worked on a number of projects together for his layout, and I'm truly blessed, not only to you know, be able to work on that model railroad, which, folks, if you don't know the Hoosic Valley lines, please become familiar, because it's really, you know, kind of a seminal model railroad in this hobby. But you know, to learn from someone with Dick's talent and Dick's patience for teaching and willingness to share. But we were, as many of the listeners of the Scotty Mason Show know, the last project we did together was a very large paper mill complex, and I had the opportunity to participate in an operating session there a month or so ago, and I hadn't operated in a while, so I wanted to go up, but specifically I wanted to operate the paper mill,
Right.
and which he named after me, and honestly I really wish he didn't, but
What is it,
you know,
Mason Mills or something?
it's Mason paper.
Okay.
But you know, I'm a model builder, really. You know, I'm a model railroader by name, but I'm a model builder. And Dick is so well-rounded, which is why, Mike, he gets such great use out of this layout. But the operating scheme that he developed for this complex is phenomenal. It took me a solid 3 hours to
Oh,
complete
I'm not surprised. Yeah,
the job.
I was gonna guess something along those lines. I've done stuff like that up at Mike Confalone's, and even at Neil's. And when you have a well-designed industry like that, it's an engaging thing to work on for you know, several hours, like you say.
I'm on a little bit of a tangent here, and I promise I'll pull it back in. But you know, I spent 3 hours with a smile on my face. But one before the operating session, he and I were talking about, you know, kind of what's next. Now, this is anybody would look at this model railroad and say it's complete, and it really kind of is. But I want to keep working with Dick, and so I'm, you know, kind of pushing some ideas. But Mike, we're at a point there where there really isn't any logical place to, you know, do any kind of a substantial project. Mm-hmm. You know, for better or worse, that's the culmination of over 50 years of steady progress and steady right. modeling and linear thought.
And I think, you know, that's sort of what my goal is. In other words, I don't always want to have chaos down there. I don't want to always be embroiled in tearing stuff out and making a big mess and you know, everything that goes along with that. I looked at this as a way of kind of basically finally getting everything I wanted in a layout. I've actually found a way to in effect expand the size of the layout greatly without having a bigger room, you know, which is no small trick. And you know, it's really out of scope for this particular conversation, but I'm starting the tail of that in Model Railroad Hobbyist starting in January and probably February, and on subsequent shows we'll talk more about what was driving the decision making behind this and what I hope to gain out of it and why it made it worth it to go through what I've gone through this year. But make no mistake, my goal is to not do something to this extent again.
Well, you know, you'd like to think that there's, to use a train analogy, a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yep.
And for me as an outsider, and I'm anxious to get down there and see what you've done, but, you know, having operated on the layout in the past and knowing how well thought out it is, but also knowing how analytical you are, you know, I look forward to getting back to that opportunity to operate, just knowing that whatever you've done is going to make it better.
Well, yeah, I'm actually getting a lot of pleasant pressure from the regular ops guys because, you know, Confalon's been carrying the load of people operating with his layout. You know, we had been in a situation where we were all bouncing around from each other's layouts, and that was a nice mix. But you know, it's not nothing to host an op session and to be the only guy doing it all the time. You know, he's anxious to get back to a more balanced kind of a scenario here, and so am I. So I'm shooting for like a small test op session, you know, maybe April, mid-April, which will be the 1 year anniversary of Layout Kaboom here. So I'm hoping that I can use that as a deadline. But it does mean that I'm pushing forward all the time. You know, I had some IT related work yesterday afternoon that I needed to do, but before I left, I made sure that I went down and put a coating of acrylic on the road so that when I got back later I could dull coat it. You know what I mean? So I'm not letting any grass grow under my feet with this. I'm not doing it with frenzy, but I'm just not I'm not wasting time.
Well, and you know, those of us who know you and those of us who have listened to you, you know, in the old podcast and will be listening to you in this one, probably expect nothing less from you. So we look forward to updates. But with that in mind, Mike, you know, the other part of this too is the, you know, the business of the hobby,
sure,
which we're also in. And, you know, maybe you can kind of update us on that aspect of your life as well.
Well, you know, that's true. I mean, in essence, I'm running multiple businesses in my spare time. And if anybody's in business for themselves, you know what the pros and cons are of that. You know, the pro is you get to make your own schedule, and the con is you're never off.
Right.
You're never off duty. Basically, you have to have some discipline to control it and make sure it doesn't take over your whole life. But it's kind of the only thing I was ever cut out to do, so I have no regrets. It can be a challenge at times because people don't. They tend not to schedule their needs around your own preferences, so you have to respond to the market per se. So, with one hat, I'm in information technology, and we support a number of businesses, and I manage a number of IT related projects. On another, I operate Mike Rose Hobbies, and although we sell all kinds of little parts and video related things that are proprietary to Micro's Hobbies. Probably the biggest aspect of the business is locomotive sound installs. And that's something that I started doing several years ago. At this point, I've literally done, it's got to be well north of 350 installs of sound in locomotives. And it seems like a big number because it is, and it's really, I think, the only way you get good at it. I mean, I've heard people say, "Well, I'm able to do that. I'm going to do it myself." And why not, right? If that's what you enjoy doing. But there's just a huge difference between, the effort and time involved in doing a sound install, and how good you get at it after you've done 350 of them, right? So, there's a learning curve there. And a lot of people consider it something that they'll never have enough locomotives to do to ever get good at it. So that tends to be my clientele. A lot of them are people who could do it, but their time is better spent working on their layout or building scenery or whatever it is that they feel like doing. If you have a huge fleet, I have a huge fleet. So for me, part of the driving force behind getting good at it was I knew I would do a sufficient number of installs of my own to get good at it, to be efficient at doing it. So I think people are finding that rather than make all the mistakes and reinvent the wheel, in many cases, it's just easier to have me do it. And usually after I do one install for them, they get it. And a high percentage of my business is repeat business. People just keep coming back for more. So I'm at a point now where the installs, much to my astonishment, are stretched out, in some cases, a couple of months out. So at any given time, I've got a couple of months worth of work if I just sat down there and that's what I did. There are cases where somebody's got it, they're in a jam, they need something quicker, and I find a way to get it done. But you don't want to be having your entire install schedule be one long emergency. So I try to discourage that unless it's really needed. Sometimes somebody's doing an obsession, they've got something down, they need something, I mean, I'll do what I can to get them going. But in general, the expectation is you send it on in. What I've been doing lately is I literally put a date right on the box so that sometimes I can look at that and make sure I'm not falling too far behind.
Sure.
And that methodology seems to be working out pretty well, and I get them done in between everything else that's going on. And it is something I enjoy doing, except for those times when it's not, because not every install is as much fun as another, and some locomotives fight you every step of the way, but that's why people pay you to do it.
Mike, our hobby is unusual in that it's really made up of a bunch of little hobbies wrapped into a big hobby.
That's what makes it
And
so interesting, I think.
it right. And from my perspective, the fastest way for me to turn a locomotive into a doorstop is to mess with the electronics. So I would much prefer to give it to you and pay you whatever to make sure it's done right than to break it. Which, is what I would do. So I totally get, the folks out there that, prefer to build scenery or prefer to operate their layout or, do anything under the sun, go to the dentist a lot, then mess with the electronics end of our hobby. But, having said that, hats off to you for having that aptitude, because I think that that's one of the areas of the hobby that's the most difficult to be good at.
Well, I think, like I said, you have to do a sufficient quantity of it to ever have a prayer of being good at it. And if you have, a dozen engines of your own to do, well, that's just not going to happen. So these installs will take you longer than they would take me.
Sure.
And there's mistakes that you'll have to make and redo that I've already made and have learned from and I don't make anymore, It's interesting, people say, what's it going to cost? And, of course, on my website, mrhobby.com, I have pricing guidelines. And I phrase it like that because in many ways, no two installs are exactly alike. They don't have a lot of deviation from install to install in terms of what it costs, but they're never exactly the same because each locomotive is going to have different issues. If it's a brass locomotive, it'll have issues that are different from a plastic. If it's an older legacy locomotive as compared to a modern locomotive, the issues are different. If you're going to have lots of lighting, it'll take me longer to do the lighting than to do the decoder and sound install in many cases. I've got one fellow in Chicago who routinely has me do front and rear ditch lights. The front ones have to blink. He's got a rotary beacon. You know what I mean? All of that stuff is you're dealing with surface mount LEDs and fragile little wires and body shells that want to pinch every wire as you're putting the whole thing together. So, the more lighting you do, the more the install costs, because it all comes down to time, effort, and annoyance.
And it's finicky work.
Yep. It's work that can't be rushed. And honestly, on many of those big installs like that, you really can't get what it's worth.
No.
You just can't charge enough. I've got a steam engine sitting there that I'm doing for a friend of mine, and I've had it for so long, I've decided I can't even charge him for it.
It's part of it too is that because it's our hobby, there are things that we like to do better than other things.
True.
So there are probably decoder projects that you look at and say, okay, this is pretty cool. Mm. And there are probably ones you get in and you're just like, this is drudgery. Shoot me now.
There are occasional projects that somebody will float by me and I'll do my best to discourage it. But most of them are not like that, Mm. And I'm not afraid to work on brass. I've actually had quite a good number of really good brass installs. In some ways, not having weights that you usually need to mill out and make room for, some brass engines are a joy to work on, believe it or not. And some of them are a nightmare. It just depends who the builder is, what vintage it is, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure, I understand. All right. Just to kind of bring folks up to speed with my end of things here.
Yeah, what are you doing these days with your structure business and all of that?
Well, I've kind of gone into witness protection. I've changed my name. We're talking in mid December here, and I'm just getting to the end of the probably the busiest year in my life, my working life ever. And folks may know that I have a full time job outside of the hobby, and it's just been a real, real crazy, nonstop, very productive, very successful year that still at this point isn't going quietly into that night, but I'm happy about that, but it hasn't really allowed me to focus on my business in the hobby, and many of our listeners have been wonderful over the years and have purchased the kits and have purchased the DVDs and continue to do so. But I mentioned to Mike before we started recording that several months ago, my website went down because the company that hosts it crashed. And when they reloaded all of the sites that crashed, they reloaded evidently an old version of my website that didn't allow for people to check out of the shopping cart and didn't allow people to contact me via email. I believe people were emailing me and I wasn't getting them. So I was de facto out of business and knew about it and just let it go because I honestly couldn't handle anymore. So
what's the plan moving forward then?
Well, I'm back on site. The new website or the functioning website has been reloaded. Everything has been corrected. People are now able to contact me. People are now able to purchase kits and DVDs online. And folks, my apologies. It was just as my friend Bob Leonard aptly would describe of me, I'm always trying to squeeze 10 pounds of you-know-what into a 5-pound bag.
Aren't we all, though? I mean, really, when you come right down to it.
Yeah, it's, and you can only try to do that for so long, Mike, before it catches up.
Everything has to go fine, and the minute it doesn't.
Yeah, and it was, quite frankly, it was an opportunity for me to take a step back, focus on what I needed to focus on at the time and move forward with that. If there are some outstanding issues or contact things that you needed from me, folks, I apologize. I'm back and we'll get caught up with it. But I bought about 3 months ago, maybe it was four at this point, I bought a half share in a laser cutter and didn't ever think that I would go down that route because I honestly have no intentions of producing another Craftsman structure kit because I can't do it justice in terms of the time it takes for fulfillment. But a good friend of mine who I've known for almost 25 years, who's not in the hobby but is a manufacturer of race car steering wheels for people who race online, called me and said, "Hey, I really need a laser cutter. You're interested in going in half with me?" And I said, "Well, I said, well, it depend on the cost, but do some research and get back to me." And he called me back not long afterwards, and he said, "I found one." He said, "I bought it." And I said, "Oh, geez, okay, how much?" He said, "It was $1,800, brand new."
Huh.
And it's a Chinese model.
He makes it's, steering wheels? That's pretty specific.
Well, he makes – now, I don't know all of the details, and it's – what he does is not my hobby, but here's what I do know. He makes a replica NASCAR wheel and a replica Indy wheel that are so spot on you can't tell the difference between ones that come out of a real car and his. They are in such high demand that he's at about a 4-month backlog, and people are still queuing up to buy these things. I believe the price range is anywhere from about $1,200 to a little over $2,000 a piece.
See, this is another whole category of something that I know nothing about.
It makes
me wonder how many things are like that out there.
Me either, except that, Sam is an incredibly talented, intuitive, creative person. And like I say, I've known him for 25 years. He was my mechanic for many years. And at the same time, he was fixing my PCs. So this is nothing. He's got a peripheral interest in our hobby. He's done some operating on Dick Elwell's layout and, so understands the craftsmanship behind it and has an appreciation for that. So I've got this, and the best part is, Mike, the laser is sitting in his cellar. So I'm not dealing with the smell of the burning wood and that sort of stuff. But he's been very encouraging about getting me, to use it. And I'll probably do a lot of personal projects on it, and hopefully a couple of smaller things for Dick's layout. We're looking at a two-stall cinder block engine house for the paper mill locomotive. And I think that would kind of be a neat little down and dirty project. I have a real vision of what this thing should look like. Kind of based on an engine house that existed on our favorite short line, the Grafton and Upman, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. It's I actually started getting orders for DVDs for Christmas a week or so ago, Mike, and it's been so long, I had to go in and refresh myself on how to print out the shipping labels and do all of that stuff that I hadn't done in a few months. So for folks, and I don't know when we'll get this up, Mike, but if you want a DVD for Christmas, get your orders in, and I'll get them out as soon as I can. But
Well, for reference, we're recording this show in December of 2016.
yes. So if it comes out in December of 2018, know that you still have time to get your DVD orders in for the holidays. So that that's it from a business standpoint. I mean, it's going to be, what I do is going to be, mostly things that run kind of by themselves. It's easy to stuff a DVD in an envelope. I don't have any plans to produce any other DVDs at this point, but if a great idea came along, I would certainly do it.
Well, you say you don't have time to develop another Craftsman kit, and I'm certain that that's true for right now. But if I were a betting man, I would bet that someday, that's not always going to be the case, and you will do another one.
Well, I'll tell you what I, in a perfect world, now that I've got this laser. The last few years, I've kind of subscribed to this notion of that Dave Ravella has of go big or go home. And the paper mill was an example of that. It was a huge undertaking. It took 2 years to build from concept to planting it on the layout. And I, you know, it was a 2 year pregnancy, and that part of it, I guess, I didn't like. But I'm happy with the end result, and I think that Dick's layout was the perfect place for something like that. But there are other big mills that I would like to do, and there's a project that I'm looking to do in conjunction with the historical society in the town that I'm from, and it has to do with a large mill in town that was one of the first mills to manufacture Union Army uniforms in the Civil War. And it's a rambling brick structure that is obviously trackside. It was a seminal industry in town. Still, it's sublet now into many smaller manufacturers and retailers, but in its day, it was bustling, to say the least.
It
And
sounds like an interesting project. Now, do you have all the pictures for it just in case something happens to it?
well, the short answer is I do have photographs, but because it's a structure that occupies an uneven grade, it's going to require some very, very precise measuring. What I want to do is build it to scale, and what that means in terms of translating it, let's say, to HO scale, is a footprint probably about 6 feet by 5 feet.
Sounds like it's bigger than my Mehoopany plant.
It would be bigger than your Mehoopany plant, and it is anywhere from 3 to 4 stories. So it would be a major undertaking, but I think it would be,
Where would it live?
well, it wouldn't. It would be a standalone diorama.
Okay, and where would that live?
I'm thinking your barn. well, I think, and again, you know, the talks haven't gone beyond, you know, kind of the, you know, this is an idea I have. What are your thoughts stage? It would be once completed, it would be donated to the Historical Society and on display, perhaps in our museum, or we're in the process of remodeling and building a large addition onto our town library, which has display space as well. So either one of those is an option, but you know, as someone who loves to build structures and doesn't have a model railroad, I'm always thinking of ideas that allow me to do that.
Yeah, that ought to keep you busy.
Yeah. You know, and then as an aside to that, I guess, you know, thinking in terms of, you know, your decoder business, you know, I'm always looking for clients who want me to build Craftsman structure kits for them. Mm-hmm. It's something that I would take in on a limited basis, you know, the right kind of project. But like you, Mike, you know, I live in a part of the country where winters are long and tedious and dark. And, you know, if I had something like that to keep me going, I'd probably consider taking it in.
Mm. That's a good idea.
So I want to, before we break camp here, I want to talk about our favorite short line, the Grafton and Upton. And for any new listeners, this is a railroad that exists from North Grafton, Massachusetts to Milford, Massachusetts. And if you look on the map, you'll see the exact location and layout of the line. It was a railroad that was originally built in the 1800s to serve a manufacturer, the Draper, what became the Draper Industries, which had a huge, still does have a huge facility in Hopedale, although it's more abundant at this point. But a few years back, the right-of-way was purchased by a local entrepreneur, a gentleman by the name of John Della Piscoli, whom I knew from a model railroad club we both belonged to in Boston. And he also owns the Edaville Railroad, which is a two-foot gauge railroad that goes through the Cranberry Bogs of Carver, Massachusetts, and is a tourist attraction for families, especially at Christmas time. In fact, my girlfriend and I and her kids make an annual sojourn every late December, right before Christmas, to get on and ride the train and see the lights.
It's really a pretty place, and I remember it with largely good memories, except I also remember it as the place where I was the coldest I have ever been.
Well, I will tell you, and just so you know, fast forward to 2016, there's still no heat in the passenger cars.
Right.
And it can be very, very cold, but John, to his credit, now Edaville has been around since Mike and I were kids, and even before that a little bit. But when John bought it, it was in fairly rough shape, certainly in need of some TLC, and he has put millions and millions of dollars into developing it into you know, a real tourist attraction. He has built new buildings. He has refurbished old buildings. He has completely refurbished the railroad itself. And it's a pretty cool place, Mike. You know, someplace that you know, even you know, you and Karen might like to pay a visit to.
Oh, absolutely. If you can't have fun at Edaville, you're trying not to.
But for the purposes of real railroading, John also bought the Grafton and Upton. The line was buried in the dirt, and he resurrected it. He's doing incredible business. I can't believe the amount of freight cars and traffic that this little probably 20-mile railroad handles every single day. He's been very industrious and smart with his business decisions. He's brought some industry online.
It really in no way resembles the original railroad that he bought.
Oh, God, no. No. Well, the original railroad was built to service the Draper Mills. And, you know, this version of this railroad is handling, well, I was down there a few months ago, and I think I called you or texted you, but there had to be 40 or 50 tank cars in the transloading facility in West Upton. They just are about to go live with four large propane storage tanks in the North Grafton yard. They are running a bunch of really cool second generation EMD locomotives. They've got a caboose, you know, so you have to love them. But where it ties into what we do, you know, from a modeling standpoint is, you know, most of us don't have the room, Mike, for, you know, a big class one model railroad in our basements or our garage. And this is an opportunity to talk about a railroad that just about anybody with a little bit of space could model.
Oh yeah, if you wanted to pick a modern prototype and you didn't have much space, this would be such a fun railroad to model.
And then, you know, and I'd also equate this to, you know, this is this guy's model railroad, really, when it comes right down to it. You know, he has built track work. He, you know, he has graded land. He has built industry. You know, and now he's running trains. So every day is an operating session.
I bet he's having fun with it.
Well, and he's just a bright. He's a commercial developer. He's a bright guy. He certainly has a sense of vision. And you know, for all of the naysayers, the not in my backyarders, and you know, of which there are many that back up. That back up against his railroad tracks, you know, he's brought a little bit of prosperity to that region, and refurbished something that you know, has bolstered the tax base, you know, thrown some money into those coffers, and is a sound business. Not only that, but this guy has a sense of the community. He you know, is giving back. He I don't think they're doing it this year, and I don't know why, but for a few years they did the Polar Express, mm-hmm. and which has brought vast crowds, and maybe that's why they're not doing it,
right.
To the Hopedale Mass area. You know, so it's all been good. So we'll continue to talk about that, and I don't really have an update per se, other than I wanted to introduce the topic and just let folks know that they would be hearing about it on future podcasts.
Well, in the 6 degrees of separation category, one of the employees that works for the railroad is I do sound installs for, so he's offered to show us around when we are so inclined to go up there. So
I'm
looking forward to that. Admittedly, January might not be ideal for that, but we'll have to see. We'll pick our spots.
Yeah, no, you know, it's time is on our side when it comes to that, and I look forward to it, and when we do, we'll certainly report back to our listeners. So that's all I've got tonight, Mike.
Yeah, I think we accomplished our goal for today, and obviously the pressure's on to get this thing, you know, hot off the presses out there into the hands of listeners. So hopefully it will not be an extended period, and my goal is to get right on it. So hope people enjoyed the first show and are looking forward to the next.
Thanks for listening, folks. All right. I think we kicked the ball into the end zone.
You think so, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe I should stop recording.
Yeah, stop recording.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.